perform this work. We verified, and IDOT actually does the ratings. They have super unlimited capacity, which means that they can do up to $300 million of construction work. Right now, it looks like they have $79 million of our 2014 work. I will also say that under the CRP, in the larger years in the program, 2008, 2009, they performed over $100 million in those 2 years. We know from our budget presentation next year is going to be the largest capital commitment that we make, so there's going to be over $1 billion in roadway construction. So it looks like Passion's got $79 million of it right now.
$300 million is for all their work in state?
Yeah, I believe it's for everything that they do.
In state, out of state, the whole. $300 million with us, or $300 million with the system. I think that's what you're.
Yes.
Yeah. In the world. In the way up in the world. Yeah.
I'll have to check. Okay. I'll check on that.
Because obviously, if they're doing $79 or $80 million with us, we don't know what else is within that $300 million.
Sorry if I get these firms get spread so thin, especially with the subs too. And then you get, so you get the A team, you get the B, you get the C, D, and F and E team.
They did perform good work for us under the CRP. They are doing about $50 million worth of work this year for us, and they're doing fine on all the contracts.
Okay. Thank you.
And the, I see in each of these, they've got an ECP component to it.
Then. Yeah, actually, on item number two, they won the bid via the ECP credit.
And that's real and working and effective?
It's working very well. We had a this year so far, more contracts that have been won by ECP that we had in all 2013. So far, it's four, been five and counting.
And how do we monitor the success of the ECP actually?
We keep track on the participants that are, you know, that have been recruited to each of these contractors. Mm-hmm. And we also keep that very close track on the kids that are, have either been used or are still remaining for each of these contractors.
And the ECP doesn't, they haven't exhausted all their ECP on these other three
bids? No, they haven't. They still have, they spent a little bit over $100,000 worth of ECP credits.
Okay, so that's all, they used them on all three then.
Yeah, so they only needed it on one.
They only
one. We list the ECP available.
But I see, when you use it, then it's exactly.
But it's only exactly used if they wouldn't have been low, if it gets them to the low bid.
And they
so
actually.
It's not, okay, so it's not used even when they're the low bidder, if they don't need it to be the low bidder.
That's right.
We're not using that.
It's only used when they need it to win the bid.
Okay.
And it's only, I believe, the amount they need to win the bid. So they get to retain anything about that, yes. And Gustavo has these, and I pulled some of these, but we had 131 candidates. Our went through this program, earned $6.3 million so far. So of like 500 bids that we've had since 2007, 336 of our bidders have utilized ECP credits. It might not have been necessary to win the bid, but they. A lot of people are using it. 20 firms hold active certificates, 1.3 million or so. So it is a.
I'm sorry, I need to go back. Just one number, that's all. It's 157 individuals.
Is that better?
Larger number.
That's good.
So yeah, I think that's how we've been measuring the success of that program.
And. We have a nice, healthy African-American participation in this program as well. Over 64% of the participants are African-American.
Over what percent?
64%. 64%. 14% Latinos and 5% Asian-American. So.
Okay, item four is a construction contract award. This is for roof repairs at five different buildings on the Tri-State Tollway, a couple at the M3 garage, and three other plaza buildings located along the Tri-State. This was a small business set aside for small business contract. It's also unbundled because it is less than a $5 million amount. We did get two bids on this contract when we opened the bids. One of them was deemed non-responsive. It was actually the lowest bidder by like $39,000, but they had failed to submit several forms.
And so, engineer's estimates versus the award amount, just is that because we're not as refined because this is a small business?
Yeah, we rechecked that, and you know, we believe that the bid we got is a reasonable bid. We had it checked with one of our consultants who does more of the architectural type work rather than just civil roadway work, and they said that you know, it is reasonable. We did advertise this contract once previously, and we did not get any bidders. So we picked up on the outreach to try to get some small businesses engaged, and we were happy to see that at least we are getting two people acclimated to this process now.
There's no DB goals on the small businesses?
No.
Set aside no goals.
So no goals on it.
Okay.
And what's the dollar amount awarded to these?
So the BOA group was the lowest responsive and responsible bidder. We're recommending award to them, $765,996.00.
And how much should we set aside for the program? Would we set aside?
We have identified these contracts around $1 million or less. That's what we think is the soft spot for set aside.
How many of the $1 million contracts? 4, 5, 10, 20? How many?
I don't know that we've broken it out that way that we have. We can say $5 million of work next year will be in this program. No.
We are going through the evaluation of 2014
okay.
Contracts right now. Looks like we have about 100 construction contracts planned for 2014. 50 of them will be in this smaller type contract range. Not all of those will be set aside. There is some procurement guidelines there. There's 100, is it 100, John?
120.
120 categories.
Right.
So if you are going to advertise work that's solely confined to one of these categories, you actually have to advertise it as a small business set aside.
Small business set aside. Okay.
So these are roof repairs. We're going into, you know, the wet weather season. We are recommending moving forward with it. My options are limited. I could put it back out for bid or bundle it into a larger contract. I don't necessarily believe now that I'm going to get a better price on this, so that's why we recommend it.
You're coming to the winter too here, so.
And there's also an added benefit besides being a set aside furthering our goals and for city and promoting the small businesses is that on this particular bid from BOA, the bond requirement was met through the small contractor bridge program, which we've been very strongly endorsing for the past couple of years.
With the Illinois Finance Authority, right? That's the presentation that we heard.
Right, that's great, the bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this bond was issued through that program.
Nice to hear.
So I was just mumbling with Christy, of all the roofing companies that exist, why don't we get more? And she said, because there are so many regulations and things we have to do. Are we learning anything in this process as to how we help people understand?
How do we get more bidders?
Yeah.
How do we get more? I think we have to increase our efforts on doing literally almost one-to-one customized technical assistance for some of these bidders. They are you ready to bid training has really helped a lot. I think these two particular companies did come to our training. Unfortunately, one of them probably didn't listen to all of the things that we asked them to follow when they were putting their bid together. But I think that's one of the things that one of the lessons learned is that we really have to do like more of a, to the extent possible, approaches directly to specific companies that do these types of work, so that we can help them walk through the process of how to bid and call projects. So that's one of the things that I think we need to look very closely in 2014.
Are our bidding processes that much more complicated than other public, like if you were doing roofing for the city of Chicago or the county of DuPage? Or
probably not other public, but definitely probably a lot more complicated than
So is the pool of people we're looking at people who have done roofing contracts for other public agencies? Do we do outreach to them?
You know, I think one thing that is going to help us, and that we just kind of wrapped up, and we asked the program management office to help us with this, and we did coordinate it with both communications and diversity. We did a small business survey where we sent out. We're not prepared to go through the results because we just closed the survey period, and we want to try to figure out what it's telling us. But I think that has information in there too that's going to better inform us about how we can reach out to these people and get more bidders on our work, because the work is there. You know, we're going to be advertising, so it'd be nice to get, you know, a healthy contracting community bidding on it.
But I think more directly to your question, yes, we have done some outreach to other agencies for these types of work, but we have to be cautious on how we approach the potential candidates for this work. Remember, the construction size standards are $10 million or less of annual revenues, and not every company that, let's say, is on a list for the city or some of these other agencies necessarily meets that standard. So we have to walk through that carefully so that we don't send the wrong message to the wrong.
Okay, thank you. The next two items are professional services. These were two items that we selected off of TSB 13-1, so we're still completing negotiations on these. We're still completing negotiations on the professional services off of this bulletin. These two, we got the proposals in. We are recommending moving forward with them. Diversity has just received their information on these two proposals, so they'll be reviewing them between now and next week. But it looks like they are going to be fully complying with our diversity goals, exceeding them actually.
See, 30%?
Yeah. Item 5, this is for construction management. It's associated with some of our advanced work on I-90, in the eastern portion of I-90, where we're going to be building these retaining walls, noise walls, and some crossroad bridge construction. Actually, west of Higgins Road to Illinois Route 53 is where this contract limits are. Award is recommended tonight in the amount of $3,081,270.89. I will also note that Knight has agreed to a mentor-protege agreement with GSG Consultants. So, you know, that means that they're going to involve GSG in 15% of this contract, and once they do that, they will get an additional 5% credit. So they're coming in right now, I believe, at 29.8% DB commitment without that 5% credit. So they are going to be over their SOI commitment of 30%, statement of interest commitment of 30%. Item 6 is a professional contract. This is for construction management services on the Jane Adams Memorial Tollway, I-90 again. They're actually going to be overseeing our bridge work at the Higgins Road overpass and at the Barrington Road overpass. Award is recommended to H.R. Green in the amount of $6,105,035.04. They are also committed to meeting the DBE goal as advertised for this work, 20%. Item 7, this is the change order. It's for Plody Construction. The amount of the change order is $228,241.30. This change order is all associated with work that had to do with modifying the maintenance of traffic plans to coordinate the interchange construction with the, can I go back for 1 second? On item 6, I do note that the agenda was posted at $6.4 million, but the number that I read off is the final negotiated amount, $6,105,035.04. So it's less than what the agenda says. Item 7, the change order to Floaty. The Illinois Route 47 interchange was one of the first contracts that we got out on the street, and we got it out very quickly. It's the first Move Illinois contract. The design work for mainline I-90 hadn't actually even started yet. As the design proceeded and we began to implement construction on the mainline, there had to be adjustments made to the maintenance of traffic. This change order followed our C5 process. We actually had notice of an initial change of $80,000 that came in, and we processed that within the limits and authorities that we have. That was followed up by another change to do some additional shoulder modification for the maintenance of traffic that added $104,000. So that raised this one event to $189,000. And now they're relocating some of the barrier wall on the main line associated with the maintenance of traffic. So we're required by our procedures that if, you know, even if they're separate individual instances that are coming in, but they're all related to the same issue or event, which was the maintenance of traffic on the main line, we have to include them together. So this did raise above the 200,000 level, and that's why I'm giving you the background on this one and explaining it.
Thank you.
Any item 8 is a supplement in the amount of $69,650. This is for construction management work, which was done on contract 4038. With Millhouse Engineering. Millhouse, I will note, is a DMDE firm. Under this contract, they were tasked with performing some of the advanced work in the western portion of I-90. We added some additional ITS elements to that contract right at the end because we couldn't get the cameras installed, and we wanted the cameras to be installed before the mainline construction started so that we could monitor how traffic was behaving within the construction work zone, especially in these areas where you have to cross over existing pavement. So that extended the contract 60 days, and we wanted this construction manager to be out there for those 60 days, and it's going to cost, it is costing $69,650, so I'm recommending that we approve that supplement to them. The next three items are all final releases of retainage. I will say that this work is completed, it's accepted. We don't have any other outstanding issues related to this work other than the JBE. Final paperwork is still coming in. We hope to have that all verified and finalized before next Thursday's board meeting. Engineering working really hard and trying to close the contracts that we have work completed on so that, you know, we can get ready for these 100 new contracts that are coming our way. So item 9 is for final release of retainage in the amount of $475,683.79. This was on construction contract 5624. That was with Plody for work that they completed in 2012 on I-88.
We're going to defer this all to the full board meeting.
Yeah, I think
all three of these.
Yeah, our item number 2 and these last four items, you have to defer to the full board to vote on. Should I continue on with them?
Please.
Just to give you a heads up on them. Item 10 is a request for final release of retainage. It's in the amount of $305,600.84. This is on contract 5627 with Current Contracting. This was for advanced work that they did for us on the Jane Ann Memorial Tollway. And then item 11 is a final release of retainage in the amount of $157,248 on construction contract 5635 with Central Blacktop Company, and this is for work that they wrapped up for us resurfacing on the Tri-State Tollway.
So can you talk a little bit about our strategy, because the DBE commitment information on this, even though we're asking for final release of retainage, indicates still under review. So can we talk a little bit about the challenge that we've seen here and, you know, how we're proposing to deal with it, just to make sure the board is comfortable?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we have this big workload of contracts that is hanging over our heads that we're trying to process and do it in the proper manner and make sure that we're focusing on the right aspects of it. One of the challenges that we have, and you'll see on all of these jobs, these three anyways, the work was done in 2012. So it's already October in 2013. We struggled to get our final DE paperwork in. We call it Form 2115. It's the final paperwork where the DBE commits or acknowledges that this is the work that was required of them. This is what they've been paid to date. And this is the monies that are still outstanding to them. So we recognize that with these releases of retainage, some of these monies are monies that are due to the subcontractors that are working for these primes also. And they have agreements with the primes that say, well, when we get paid, you will be paid. So I get a lot of phone calls from the smaller subs saying, you know, can you get us our money back faster? And we reach out to the primes and we say, can you turn in the 2115s faster? And they reach back out to the subs and ask for it. It's been a very, it's been a challenge for us. And we even reached out and asked Gustavo to help me also to try to get the subs to send in the paperwork faster so that we can release these retainages faster.
So
because
is it more the subs not getting the paperwork in on time? Is this 2115, or is it more the primes just dragging their feet?
I think there's a lot of
combination.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think that there's one single explanation.
But I think some of the issues that I've heard, which is why we agreed to pursue this path, is that there's a chicken and the egg problem with the subs, that they're not, that they don't like to turn in the paperwork in advance of getting paid, but they're not going to get paid if they don't turn in the paperwork.
Yeah.
Right?
That's part of the issue.
Right.
So one of the things we're trying to overcome by moving forward is we feel we can always, you know, these are all contractors that have other projects for us, will likely want to, if not are going to do other work. And if there's a problem, we can always pursue them directly or as part of these other contracts, right?
Yes, that's what we've learned is that if we decide to release the final release of retainage, we are not giving up any of our rights to come back and say, hey, you didn't meet the DB commitment the way that we understood you were going to, and we are going to sanction you. And that will be fully within diversity's authority to do that, regardless of whether we take action on the final release or not.
How often does that happen?
Sanctions?
We have not had cause to issue many sanctions.
In my 3-year tenure, I have not had a sanction yet applied. We may have one later this year, but that's still pending.
And I will say that when we have issued them, they've paid them. We have 100% record on that so far. Because I think of what Christy said, these are companies that they plan to do more work for the tollway. They cannot sacrifice their relationship with us over, you know, a shortfall that they can't explain to us.
Let's worry about the subs, you know, small business owners. And that's kind of
caught
over the bag, and they're kind of rocking a hard place. And
this is not terrific. I mean, this, you can see it more on the DVE just because that's what, those are the subs that we keep the closest tabs on. But it's I think it's an issue that's,
and it's
permeates through all.
So we're not giving up any leverage at all when we release this final retainage issue. They take sanctions, but we don't take sanctions, it sounds like, very often. So just kind of trying to understand, are there a lot of repeat offenders in this, or who are the repeat offenders?
There's no repeat offenders.
So it's a one-off? It's just this is a one-off for this, these three right here?
No, I think we do struggle collecting the... I don't know that it's an issue of contractors being reluctant to submit the info. I think it's the amount of work that they have coming to them, demanding that they seek out all of these forms, collecting them from the subs, submit them to the tollway in an appropriate manner. I think that that's what's been challenging for some of these prime contractors. I don't perceive that there is some malicious intent going ahead happening with the industry. I just think it's an issue of logistics and perhaps, you know, revisiting how we're collecting this data.
One of the things that I've heard too is a complaint is, you know, you can have 5 subs that you're waiting for paperwork on. You get it from 4 of them, but it's, you know, that 5th one, for whatever reason, doesn't hold up the payment to all of them because they're all in the final release retainage. So then you have not only the prime contractor that has some skin in the game at this point, but also these subs who don't have as much capacity, those 4 that have maybe done the right thing and turned their paperwork in. It becomes challenging.
And especially, that issue is especially challenging with the DV because in order for us to be able to ascertain at the end of the date, prior to close out, exactly what was accomplished, we need to see the entire picture of all DV subs, not just a few. So we, in that ideal world, we would like to have like a full package of DV info, and that very seldom happens. I mean, more often than not, it's gives me, and it really thankful, very thankful.
Sorry, I think I cut you off.
No, I think.
Oh, no, I was going to ask, does the form that the subs do, does it come directly to you, or?
Come from the prime.
From the prime.
They both sign it.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I.
Because I remember when I was doing MB work years ago, but under the professional, doing some audit work, we would get the form directly from the state of Illinois. I didn't need the prime to sign off. We had to send it directly on the contract. They asked me how much I was paid, what was outstanding, but it was only between the state of Illinois and my company. I didn't need the prime to sign off on my form. Maybe would that speed up the process that now you got the prime out of the way and you're more looking at it?
Well, that's how we track payments, which is yet another one of our projects, both on the construction and engineering services, but also on the goods and services. You know, this tracking of the payments specifically to minority and women-owned businesses, disadvantaged businesses, and DEP John's end, which we're looking into. You know, how do we get to the point where we don't have to wait for the prime to give us info? And we can just deal directly with the sub, telling us, yeah, I got paid on X, Y, or Z's invoice. But we're not there. We don't have that system.
Because I remember at that time, it was more like it was checking what the prime was telling them. And they were
right.
They weren't asking us to check with the prime.
Exactly.
I think that was the checks and balance there.
Yeah, well, we're pursuing an RFP. Well, first of all, we have a short-term solution, but only for the goods and services, but on the diversity for construction and engineering, we're pursuing an RFP that will probably fix that. That's not an immediate solution. That's something that we're looking at probably in a year and a half to be implemented.
And when you're looking at the diverse, if the DMB, the DBE was met, did you do that at the final part of the contract? Because like if it's a $6 million contract, there's only $300,000 left on it. You made $5 million. Are you able to check on that $5 million? If they're already over the 18%,
yeah, we're able to check on that.
So, what would be the problem if the last $300,000 didn't go to?
I think that's kind of the way we're headed here. I mean, on these items, I've had them on the agenda like earlier for like the last 6 months, and it's always been cut from the final committee agenda because we're still struggling. We do get information on their DB performance as the contract's in progress. I think it's every other pay estimate they report to us what's been paid to the DBs. So I'd like to bring to the board, you know, our final release of retainage once the work is done and accepted by us, and then show you what the DB achievement is that we have verified and locked down with us. And then if there's a shortfall, Gustavo, it gets works with the contractor, gets the explanation. If he sees that he doesn't agree with the shortfall, then he imposes a sanction and we move forward. And releasing the final release of retainage doesn't impact that process or handcuff him in any way.
But I think the question that's being raised is, you know, and it sounds like you mentioned the RFP for, I think, the tracking system, right? But, you know, how does that address the point that was raised of, you know, how we go back and check directly with the subs, particularly the DBE subs, to confirm that, you know, I guess you could make the argument, I'm not saying that this is happening, but, you know, somebody signs a form that then the prime that they have to rely on for future work sees and signs, you know, if there's some incentive for them to, you know, kind of go along with the program and say something is the case that isn't the case, you know, how do we go back to the DBE subs and confirm, independent of the prime, so that nobody feels like a relationship is in jeopardy or long-term work is in jeopardy, that they're actually getting what they're getting. That's your point about the state forms, right? That it's direct with the BEP or DBE vendor. And
it seems like the prime, if he's got a, say he's got 10 MBEs working for him, he's got to now manage 10 forms. The prime's already got a lot of work to do. He's doing millions and millions of jobs all over the place, where the DBE, I think he's not as busy, where he could fill out a two-page form and say, how much did I get paid on this contract, and send it right to the tollway.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't want to transfer the prime's work, though, to the tollway, because we have even less capacity to do a whole bunch of work, but certainly the check and balance. I mean, is there something there to receive something directly?
Not currently. The way you describe it, not currently.
So it's something we should
solely reliant on that form that
So maybe we should look at that as a process improvement, you know, if there is, and see what kind of capacity that would take for us to develop internally to receive those directly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. It would make sense, yeah. We can work on that. I'm thinking of all
that. I've given us the ability to look at the capacity it would take for us to build internally in order to handle.
Yeah, certainly we can explore that and see how we can get to that.
Right.
It definitely is a process that we should focus on improving, because it's causing a big logjam, and it's not helping to keep holding these monies back. That they've actually earned the money. They've done the work to earn the money, and we're just holding it.
I mean,
they've complied with all the physical terms of the contract.
I understand, and I'm sympathetic to what we're trying to do. I think you're looking at this, your suggestion, from two different directions. You're saying take the workload off of the, you'll get the paperwork best if you put it on the MBE, and you're saying it's also a way of verifying that the MBE actually did get the work. So I think that, you know, solves two problems at one time, maybe other problems. I remember long ago when we first started talking about this, one of the concerns was that the MBEs actually didn't get the work at the end, because, you know, the primes got down to the end, and it was the landscaping and it was the other stuff that they figured, I'm finished with this job, I'm just going to blow this off and get my regular guy to figure it's too hard to work with this company, or whatever the reason was. So I think it's great that what you're going to do is verify before you come to us for the release that the actual goal has been achieved or exceeded.
That's actually not what we're
saying.
We're saying,
I want to report to you the numbers that we have documented to date.
Okay, well,
in some cases it will be, you know, in some cases they're above, and in some cases they're not above.
Okay,
but
so then you'll make a recommendation.
Because we get every other week reports, so we will know if they're a 17% goal on the contract and they've achieved thus far, with the majority of dollars spent, 15.5%. We may have that information as just that last percent and a half.
Right.
That's, you know, part of this retainage and the final work. And I think
right.
What we're saying is, and that's why I want to make sure everybody's comfortable with this, we would be releasing this retainage before we've confirmed, for instance, that they've achieved the 17.24%.
Exactly.
We haven't done the maybe thing that we are proposing we would like to do, which is on DBE earned to date, we'd actually have a number in here in the future, right? Because we know that there is a DBE earned to date.
There is data about the DBE earned to date.
Yeah.
That we are
confident about. The challenge is, right.
And that's not something that we've included here.
Right.
But we will in the future of these.
Okay.
But there's going to have to be some, if we're going to pursue this, there's going to have to be some flexibility that there's a comfort level releasing this retainage, not knowing that this 17.24%, for instance, here has been met, but knowing that we will have opportunities to go back to Central Blacktop Company or Curran or whoever else if there is a shortfall and seek the appropriate reparation.
And I know you will be, but I, you know, it's creating a sanction, it may be easier for them to pay the sanction, but to continue to try to achieve the goal. Right? And I understand that we have some leverage over them, but I think we need to be mindful that a sanction may not be sufficient to get the behavior that we want. But you know these problems.
They've been working on it. Yeah, they've been working on it for years now. I don't know that we've had a lot of sanctions, but you're right. If it becomes onerous or they just prefer not to meet the goal,
you
can pay the sanction if we tolerate repeat.
Yeah. So that's the issue, is how do we create that
the right kind of escalation, that it's not just a $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 on this one item, but they know that if they continue to underperform, there's a bigger penalty. That's what you're asking.
Yeah.
That's what you're suggesting.
Okay. And maybe there's the potential to report on those items, you know, independent of just this individual item. You know, we can give you the information at, you know, quarter points in the year and let you know, did we do any sanctions and what was, you know, the overall goals that we've achieved versus what was, you know, included. And we have that, some of that information in our monthly report and also in our quarterly report. So I don't think it would be a big lead to enhance it.
Or just draw to our attention when there's an issue.
So item 12 is the de-venom action, which we typically defer to the full board.
If it goes to executive session, we're going to defer to the full board.
So these are the ones that were working their way through process last round, so we'll actually just be approving in full board.
Somebody forgot to bring this board back in, you're so polite. But there's some new ones, I understand, right?
Well, we thought that there were, but it sounds like there are not.
Right.
Oh, okay, sorry.
We heard yesterday there are not.
Oh, okay.
Hopefully, that doesn't change between now and next week, then.
Well, if it doesn't, then we don't have to go into executive session, because we've already reviewed this in executive session.
Correct, so if there are not, just in the full board open session, we'll approve these. If there are, we can deal with them in executive session at full board next week, before we come back to the public.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Engineering, we're going to take item one, Director Darcy has refused. Do I have a motion to approve the award of contract to Passion?
So moved.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes, moves to the full board. Item two is going to be deferred to the full board. Item three, we'll take items three and four together. Motion to approve item three, award of contract to Passion, and item four, award of contract to the Bowen Group. Motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes, moves to the full board for consent. For the consent agenda, items five and six, acceptance of proposal from Knight, and acceptance of proposal from H.R. Green, or a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes, moves to the full board. Item number seven, change order for Cody, motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes, moves to the full board. Item 8, Director Darcy is recused. Do I hear a motion to approve acceptance of proposal from Millhouse Engineering?
So moved.
Second. Second by Paula. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes, moves to the full board. Items 9, 10, and 11, final release retained will be deferred to the full board meeting next week. And item 12 will also be deferred to the full board meeting.
Sure, 9, 10, and 11, you feel free to move to the consent if the group here is fine. Those are just the release of retainage.
So 9, 10, and 11, we don't need to defer. We need to vote on those?
Absolutely. We can move those to the consent with a vote in this committee.
Even though, okay. All right. Items 9, 10, and 11, do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes, those move to the full board. And item 12, any?
12 doesn't need to be dealt with today.
No, so no, defer.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks, Paul. Legal. That's several items.
Just a few. I thought, Chair Wolf, if I could just on your topic about we were talking about the retainage. What we were talking about today is not an absolute. If there is a situation where we have, for instance, very little DBE information and a retainage is coming up, the team is not in any way bound to proceed with that retainage release. We can always deal with that and hold the money while we're discussing with that prime. So I just wanted to make sure that question was rounded out. Our first item this morning is an IGA. It made an appearance with the committee that we saw you a few months ago, but we are now essentially caught up with the city of Elgin, or rather they're caught up with the tollway and ready to proceed, as we understand. This relates to work in the removal and replacement of the Fox River Bridge at I-90. This is essentially a cooperative IGA with the city of Elgin that will allow us access to haul routes and other access rights we need. The tollway will be taking various types of real estate rights, full takes, partial easements, temporary easements. The tollway will then be moving around drains, sewers, and utilities to restore everything when our work is completed. You'll see a $0. That's not to indicate that the work that we're talking about here is at no cost, but when we deal with the actual work in a contract to do the work with the vendor, that's where you'll see the cost. This is just setting up the framework for the cooperation with the city.
Okay.
Item number two is another IGA. This is with the Illinois Department of Transportation to better share information, another cooperative type arrangement with IDOT to
establish information flow relating to the issuance of overweight and over-dimensioned vehicle permits, which makes a lot of sense as the vehicle can travel both on a tollway road and an IDOT road to the extent we're coordinating better on permits about what weight is acceptable, et cetera. Sharing information not only with respect to the permit process, but also our bridge capacities throughout our system with IDOT, we will facilitate those permit issuances. So again, this is a $0 essential information sharing between the tollway and IDOT.
Had they not shared information in the past then as far as the permits? There wasn't any reciprocity with IDOT, the tollway, as far as commercial traffic?
I think we did, but it was more clumsy.
Yep.
And, you know, IDOT may have a road, it might be our bridge, but it goes, you know, over us, and then that would stop everything, and then they would reach out to us. And so now, you know, we've told them, you know, we'll give them that information on these crossroad bridges, and then they'll be able to just process the permits according to, you know, the information that we give them.
Who sets the fees on the permits? Is that set by IDOT, or do we set it, or are they the same?
We do have a fee structure for overweight and over-dimensioned vehicles on the tollway system, and I know IDOT does also. And I don't know the exact details on that, but I can give it.
Have we increased those fees over the last few years?
I don't believe we have.
Is that something to consider due to the impact that these commercial traffic has on the roads? Which leads me to weigh stations. I think we've got moving motion weigh stations throughout the system.
Yes, we do have weigh motion systems that are installed. They're primarily at the entry points into the tollway system. So, you know, on the north end of I-90 or at the south end of the tri-state where, you know, trucks are entering our system. We have five of them.
There's five?
Yes. And we do work.
Are they monitored by the state police? Are there people there monitoring?
We actually get the data, and we do coordinate with the state police on a regular basis, and we will highlight those portions of our system that are seeing, you know, a lot of overweight vehicles that are coming through, you know, that we don't have permits for, so that they can actually go out there and create an enforcement zone, you know, on a particular day. We get information, you know, at even like what times they're coming through. It's been pretty successful. We have had some issues getting our system perfectly tuned and operating correctly, but we're working those out. I see a big value in that because it'll keep the trucking industry honest, and they do have a real impact on the roads. Overweight vehicles can definitely decrease the life of the pavement and bridges.
What's the capacity on the trucks as far as the tons?
The legal load limit in Illinois, I believe, is 80,000.
So 80,000. How's it compared to how many cars? What's the equation? I think you mentioned before the equation for every truck at 80,000. How many cars does that equate to as far as impact on the road?
I have to go way back. I think when we were originally looking at the congestion relief program and developing some rules of thumb, we thought it was like 10,000 cars equated to one truck.
So one truck as far as impact with the wear and tear on the roads?
Definitely the trucks. You know, if we were only designing the roads with respect to, you know, the weather and cars, we would have much thinner pavements out there and they would last a lot longer. And the trucks really drive the pavement design effort.
Okay.
Will this IGA though help the contractor that has to wait on a move because he doesn't have your permit? He's 3 weeks behind on that. The tollway or the IDOT's already given him that permit?
Yes, it should. I mean, it should help a lot with that situation.
It'll
but it really is very, to the extent that people have said that, you know, I've looked into some of those cases and it's really not the case that they're waiting for a lot. I mean, it takes us 24 to 48 hours to turn around a permit. So with even a moderate amount of planning, what this does help with is, you know, those folks who aren't familiar with the system and don't maybe realize that this bridge is actually not under the IDOT permit process, so they've, you know, planned out their whole route and then realized that they need a special permit and it's 24 to 48 hours to get it for that particular little section of their trip. So to that extent, but there shouldn't be a situation, and I've not found a legitimate one, where we're holding them up for that kind of length of time.
I think think ultimately we are working towards some type of
online
system.
Yeah.
Because it's true, the motoring public doesn't necessarily know, you know, who has jurisdiction over the roads they're going over. They just know this is the way I want to get there.
Thank you.
Dave? Thank you. Number three, we'll visit with briefly an executive session. This is a piece of personal injury litigation. Number four is listed on the agenda. We were optimistic we talked today, but as Christy indicated, we will talk with the full board next week. This relates to the increase of speed limits potentially on the system to be consistent with the new state law taking certain segments up to 70 miles per hour. And our last item, we will just flag for you briefly an executive with an update on a collective bargaining agreement that appears to be close at hand, but not yet ratified by the union, as we understand.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions regarding intergovernmental agreements? Intergovernmental agreements 1 and 2. Do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Those two items move to the full board, full consent agenda. Item 3 will be an exec. Item 4 is referred to the full board. Item 5 will be an exec. Okay. Any unfinished business? Christy, Andrew? Anybody? Any unfinished business? Anybody? Okay. Any new business? Okay. Counselor, do you want to give us a motion to go into exec?
I recommend a motion to proceed to executive session pursuant to certain sections in the Illinois Open Meetings Act, specifically section 2C2 to discuss collective bargaining items and 2C11 to discuss the litigation.
Motion approved. So moved. Second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We are now in executive session.